All right, morning, everyone. Today's daf in Kedushin is Samech Zion. Thank Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf. As long as Zechon Ishmas Liba Gabriela Bas Shmuel, we are on the very bottom of Samech Vav Amud Aleph. The last two words were the words Amarava. Don't ask. Okay. We are last two words with the words Amar Rava. Okay. Discussion in the Gemara that took place yesterday, Machlok Zabai and Rava, whether or not there was nus that took place in front of an aide, one single witness. So does that create a nemanus or does that not create a nemanus? Now you recall yesterday in the very bottom of Samech Hamad Beis, so Abai brought in a number of halachas where one witness is going to be believed. Although, according to Rashi and according to Tosos, it's not really the nemanus of the one witness, is that the one witness is providing you information, your shosik. Tosus uses the language of Shika Koda, so really it's more your admission than it is the actual aid that's testifying, and it is a little misleading because the Gemara uses the word Naman. So it's we were talking about this after the daf yesterday as well. The word Naman doesn't really speak to this, but that's the but in saying over the Rashi and the Tosos. So we learned yesterday that a number of halachas where if one witness were to say something to you, so that one witness is going to be Naman. So this is going to be now a construct of that discussion, further application of that discussion, and it's a most serious situation. And that is if one witness sees his nus. So one witness sees his nus and tells you about it. So what is the ramification? Now, if two witnesses were to see it, so they come and inform you that they saw it, so then your wife is mezana. And she now is considered a sota vadai, and you have to divorce her, etc., etc. On the other hand, if there's one witness who saw it, so does that have any? Does that necessarily need a halachic ramification? So that was a bachlokes between Abai and Rava. So Abai says Naman, Rava says Eino Naman. So the sheets line up, where Abai, consistent to the other positions that he held, gives credence to one witness, and Rava says no. This is a davashiba erva. Davashiba erva, any matter that has to do with a sexual crime. So in pachas, davashiba erva pachas mishnayim. You need two. So that is the basic. Machlokas as it lays out. What we did yesterday in the Samech Vav Amud Aleph is we went over a couple of incidents where it seems like one witness was sufficient, but the Gemara rejected both of those proofs. We are now on the very bottom of Samech Vav Amud Aleph with the words Amar Rava. Mina min Allah. How do I know? How do I know that in order for there to create an Isser, there has to be two witnesses? So we learn it from the following Dinan in the Mishnah. Amar Rabbi Shimon Maisa ben Megur Shel Diskin Biavne. So there was the following episode. Megurus Mayim, Rashi explains, it's some sort of pail of water. I'm sorry, some sort of stream of water. So the and it was in Yavne Shaisa Omele Becheska Shlema Madu Venimsa Chaser. So basically, it's a form of a mikvah, and now you know the nature of water. Water evaporates. So eventually, what happens? I find this with my pool all the time, especially when you go through a length of time where it doesn't rain. So or I have a hole in my pool. But okay, let's. you're right. A leak. Yeah. Okay, anyway, so the wonders of home ownership. So there was a mikvah, and originally it was measured, and it had 40 sa of water. In order for a mikvah to be kosher mikvah, it has to have 40 sa of water, and this mikvah did. But then, as nature takes its course, so then the water evaporates, and it was less than 40 sa. Now, the question is a very simple question. For the last couple of weeks, we've been toveling in this mikvah, thinking everything was good. Now, we know there was a point of kashrus, and then we know that there's a point of psul. And when did exactly take it? Did it change? Now this really touches on some basic halachic issues of chazaka, meaning it had a presumptive state of being kosher. That's chazaka mikara. And now it's not kosher, so it's chazaka mihashta. So it's like two competing chazakas, one against the other. So now, if I go over my history, last couple of weeks I've been toveling. So have I been toveling in a kosher mikvah, or have I been toveling in a pasul mikvah? It's a really simple question. So shahayso amadu bechetz kashlema amadu v'nimsas chasera. So what's the halacha? Called taru shenasu agaba. So anything that was tovel in the mikvah assumed to be tahor. So hi, Rabbi Tarfon mitar. So Rabbi Tarfon said, okay, so we're going to go with the original presumptive state of this mikvah being a kosher mikvah, and we're good to go. Rabbi Kiva mitamin. Rabbi Kiva says, no. Right now we know the mikvah is not kosher. We don't know when that mikvah made that turn from being a kosher mikvah to a pasul mikvah. So here's what I know now. I now know that the mikvah is a pasul mikvah. So I'm just going to go backwards with that assumption. So the chazaka mehashta is going to beat the chazaka mikara. I'm Rabbi Tarfon mikvah zeh bechetzke shalom hu amei misafik atabalachasro al techasro misafik. So now we are having the basic argument between Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Tarfon in terms of which chazaka is going to be more significant. So Rabbi Tarfon starts off the opening argument, which is, look, we know it was a kosher mikvah. So we know it was a kosher mikvah, so we go with that chazaka, that's the chazaka mikara, and that's the chazaka we're going to assume until this point in time. So I'm Rabbi Akiva Adam Zebecheskas Tami who omed misafik ataba latara atatarana misafik. So Rabbi Akiva says, look, somebody tovled in the mikvah, right? That person who tovled in the mikvah, he was for sure tummy. And now the person tovling in the mikvah is for sure tummy, and now you were changing his chazaka. So you want to change his chazaka based on a suffik? I don't know when the mikvah went from being kosher to being pasul. So now you're going to take a presumptive state of the person who tovled in, who's tummy, and now you're going to say that he changed status because of a questionable mikvah. So wonderful. So you have two very good, excellent arguments provided by the Tanaim in terms of which way should we go. So I'm Rabbi Tarfon Mashallah Omeid Umakriva Gabi Mizbech Venodeshu Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza. So Rabbi Tarfon says, well, let me give you an analogy in order to prove my point. And that is, let's imagine we have a Cohen, who's been doing the avod in the Beis HaMikdash, and then he received some very unfortunate news, and that is that his father's a Cohen, but his mother is unfortunately a Grusha, and when his father married her. And so that means that he's a Chalal. And Chalal meaning he's devoid of Kedushas Kahuna, and he can't be doing the Avodah. Or Ben Chalutza, Shavodah Sakshera. Now, we're going to go over the history of Avodah that he did. What is the net effect of not, from this point going forward, he can't do the avodah anymore. That's obvious. Going backwards now, what about all the avodahs he's done in the past? So all the avodahs he's done in the past is kosher. Okay. Now that seems strange, meaning, well, I understand, he didn't just become a chalal. He's been a chalal from birth. So why should all the avodahs being done in the past be kosher? Stay tuned, we're going to address that question a little bit later on. But right now, let's hold that as a fact. That's a tenet. That the avodah that was historically done before he became aware that he was a chalal is going to be avodah kshera. Now I'm Rabbi Kiva Mashal. So Rabbi Kiva says, well, let me give you an analogy. And my analogy is going to basically be the same with one very important difference. I'll give you an analogy and I'll show you that I'm right. And my analogy goes like this. Mashal amen makriv agabim mizbeach. Let's say that we have a Kohen who is doing the avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. Now here, the discovery is that this Kohen has a physical blemish. A physical blemish also disqualifies the Kohen from doing the avodah. Now, shavodah sapsula. Now again, right now it's just the facts. The facts are that if a Kohen discovers that he's a mum, and this is not a newly generated mum, this is a mum that he had for a long time, but for whatever reason, he only discovers it now, any avodah that he's done in the past is going to be avodah sapsula. It will be disqualified avodah, and then all the past avodahs are going to have to be redone because this Kohen was not a valid Kohen. Now, again, what's the difference between Chalal and Baal Mum? So stay tuned because that information is coming later. But right now, but these are simply the facts. So now, basically, the question is as follows. Now that we have the facts on the table, so our mikvah that was kosher but now no longer kosher, so what is it more analogous to? Is it more analogous to the case of the Kohen who learns that he's a Chalal? Or is it more analogous to the case of a Kohen who learned that he's a Baal Mum? And that makes all the difference in the world. A Kohen who learned that he's a Chalal, past history, check. A Kohen who learns he's a Baal Mum, past history, no good. So which one is this mikvah more comparable to? I'm Rabbi Tarfon, Ata di Misula Baal Mum, Vani di Misula Ben Grushula Ben Chalutza. So obviously, what is odds over here is, what's the better comparison? Nira le midome. Idom le Ben Grushula Ben Chalutza, Nidonenek Ben Grushula Ben Chalutza. Imdom le Baal Mum, Nidonenek Baal Mum. So basically, Rabbi Tarfon says, look, now I know this debate over here is going to basically be won by who has made the better analogy. If I made the better analogy, so then the mikvah should be historical. historically kosher. If you made the better analogy, the mikvah is going to be historically pasul. So now, let's see. Hischa Rabbi Akiva Ladon. So Rabbi Akiva took the first argument, and he goes like this: Mikvah psula biyachin, ubalmon psula biyachin, va'al yochich ben grusha ben chalutza shepsula bishnayim. So when it comes to a mikvah, so how do we establish that a mikvah becomes pasul? One can establish that. Rashi writes over here: one person can establish that. Rashi writes that if one person were to measure the mikvah, and based on his measurement, the volume of water in the mikvah is insufficient, so the mikvah is going to be rendered pasul. That one witness is going to be believed. Why? Rashi quotes the very beginning of Masechta Gittin. What do we learn? Because now we're talking about Isser. Now, between you and I, you know, we know that we're not really talking about Isser. We're talking about Tumah Tahara. But the point is that we're not talking about corporal punishment. We're not talking about arayos. We're talking about areas of halacha where one witness is going to be extended credibility, like Isser, and now we're going to extend that to like Tumah Tahara. So one witness is going to be believed. That's true when it comes to a... just give me 1 second. That's true when it comes to a mikvah that's depleted. That's also true when it comes to a kohen with a blemish, a kohen with a physical blemish. So there, that's not a davar she'be'erva. So when a kohen that's blemished, one witness can substantiate that that he's a bamum. Masha'en can, when it comes to ben grusha ben chalutza, ayochiv ben grusha ben chalutza shipsul b'shnayim. But when it comes to your parents had an illicit relationship, your father was a kohen, your mother was a grusha, and you're the product of such a union, well, that's a davar she'be'erva. Okay, now, it's not arayos per se, meaning it doesn't formally fit in the category of arayos, meaning it's not in the parshas of Achrimos and Kedoshim, but still, it has to do with the illicit relationships. And that can only be established with two witnesses. So, Rabbi Akiva says, that's argument number one. Now, let's pause. Danny, go ahead. Okay, that right. In other words, you're right. It can. You're the mikvah could then translate into an iser arayos. Okay, fair point. And would Reb? Okay, but they're really talking more about Tumah Tahara. But it could be. Could be. You're right. Could be that if it extends then to the woman being an Ida, that's a very good point. Okay, so Davar Acher, and then the Gemara makes, Rabbi Akiva makes a second argument, and it goes like this: Mikvah Psula Begufa, Bamum Psula Begufa. Now, when it comes to a mikvah, there's something intrinsically wrong with a mikvah, meaning it's depleted. When a kohen is a Bamum, there's something physically wrong with the kohen. He has a physical blemish. Vayochich Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, Shipsula Me'acherim. However, Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, there's nothing inherently wrong with the kohen per se. It has to do with who his father is, who his mother is. So those are external factors, not internal factors. So, Amalei Rabbi Tarfon, Akiva Kol HaPorsh, Memchal HaPorsh Menachayim. So at that point in time, Rabbi Tarfon conceded, he yielded the argument, Rabbi Akiva, you are right. In fact, anyone who moves away from you, moves away from life, your position is the more sound position. Okay. Adkan, that is the Braisa that we just learned together. Now, we still don't know why, and parenthetically, when we get to the reason why, it won't really be a why. It'll be drushas. But we don't know why it is yet that a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza Zavoda, a Chala Zavoda, Lima Freya is going to be okay. And the Balmum's Avoda Lima Freya is not going to be okay. We still haven't, the Gemara hasn't touched on that yet. The Gemara right now is focused on one singular point, and that is, you saw what Rabbi Akiva argued, and Rabbi Tarfon gave him no response. And that is that in order to establish someone being a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, you need two witnesses. Now, Hai Balmum Shepsul Biyachad Echidami, the Kamachish Lemi Mehemen. So the Gemara says, now, if one witness comes and says to the Kohen, your Balmum, and the Kohen says, well, I don't know what you're talking about, meaning I'm not. So then, the one witness obviously is not going to believe over the Kohen himself, El Deshosik. So it must be that the Kohen's response is, the Kohen's response is silence. Well, if he agrees, then there's no Kiddush whatsoever. But the Kohen's response is silence. So now, we're creating a parallel. So in the parallel case of Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, it must be that somebody comes over to the Kohen and says, your mother was a Grusha, your father was a Kohen. And he's quiet. And so in the case of Balmum, we said that he is going to be a Baal Mum based on the testimony of one witness. And in the case of Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, we said he's not going to change status because of the testimony of one witness, even though he's quiet. V'kitani mikva psula b'yachir Baal Mum psula b'yachir v'ayuchech Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza shepsula b'shnayim. So it seems pretty clear from this brisa that in order to establish someone to be a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, you need the testimony of two, not one. Okay. This seems to be a very solid proof for Rava. Abai Amar Lolam Dikamachishle. So Abai will tell you, no, really there's a chasha. Really, we're talking about a case where the accusation was that he's a Bamum, and he responded. And not only did he respond, but he contradicted. And then the question is, it's one against one. So over here, in the case of being a Bamum, so even though he's being machish, but there is an argument ender. And that would be, we're talking about a physical blemish. Either you have it or you don't have it. Now you're saying, I don't have it. Okay, I'm saying you do have it. And now, it's already an uncomfortable conversation taking place between two people, but now, in terms of ne'emanus, so that one witness is going to be more credible because this is information that's verifiable. And since it's verifiable, so then the one witness is going to be believed. V'hainu diktani mikve psul begufo, ba'mum psul begufo, v'ayuchich ben grusha ben chalusa shepsul me'acherim. And that, in fact, says Abaye, is essentially read into the brisa. Meaning, what did the brisa say? Baal Mum is intrinsic. And that actually is connected to the first point. Meaning, it's intrinsic, therefore, it's verifiable. We could see it right now. Period. Okay, so Ad Kan. So that takes us now to, once again, another brisa, seemingly a proof for Rava. Abaye deflects the proof. And then we're just going to tie up some loose ends. Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza Davos Akshera Minalan. Okay, how do I know? How do I know that when a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza does the avoda, he was doing it while unaware of his family background, and then someone tells him about his family background. From that point going forward, he can't do the avoda. But historically, anything he has done is going to be okay. Where does that come from? Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Amar Kra, Vaisalo Lazaro Acharav Bein Zera Kasher Bein Zera Pasal. So it will be to him and to his Zera, and it doesn't matter whether it's Zera Kasher, Zera Kasher, Zera Pasal. Avudu Shmuel Amar Mehacha. So Berech Hashem Chelo Ufol Yadav Tirtzeh. So Hakadosh Baruch will bless his Chelo, and anything that he does will be credited by Kadosh Baruch Hu. Afilu chulin shebo tirtzeh. And even if he's chulin, again, from the word halal, meaning even if he's a hollow kohen, even if he's devoid of his kedushas kahuna, still the avoda that he does is going to be an acceptable avoda. Rabbi Yana Amar Mehacha, Rabbi Yana has a third source. Ubat lakon asher yeh b'yamim ahem, v'chisala adalcha shadam holech etz hakohen shalo yaya b'yamav. The pasuk says that you're going to go to the kohen who is there in your day. In your day, really, you're going to visit a kohen in another time period? Obviously, it's the only kohen you can go visit. So, elazeh kashav nischalal. So we're talking about somebody who is kasher, and then he becomes nischalal. So that is three separate sources that are given amongst the Amarayim. What is the source of the Torah that tells us that even if you're a Ben Grusha Ben Chalutza, you're not, i.e. you're a Halal, and you do the Avoda, so bid the Eved, once it's done, the Avoda is acceptable.
How can you go from Kasher to Halal?
He can't. In other words, then you're right. Yes, he found out. He thought he was kosher, and then he becomes, and then he learns that he's a chala. And now on the other side of this discussion, if a kohen is blemished, physically blemished, and he does the avoda, it's not good, and it never was good. So how do I know that? I'm Rav Yehuda, I'm Shmuel, I'm Kra. Lachen emor in nison leo is brisi shalom. Kishuhu shalem. So it is a drasha in the word shalom. Shalom could also be read shalem. Velo kishi chaser. So in other words, he has to be physically complete. He has to be tam. He has to be unblemished. So v'hash shalom ksiv. Now the Gemara says, yeah, but that's not what the Torah says. The Torah says the word shalom. I'm Rav Nachman vav de shalom kitiyahu. So if you look carefully in the Chumash and you look at the word shalom, you'll see that the vav is a shortened vav, meaning part of the Masorah is that the vav over there is on one hand the pshuto shal mikra. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave Pinchas bris shalom. He gave him a everlasting a covenant of peace. But then A layer below that is the idea that shalem, that in order for a kohen to be considered a kohen, in order for him to do the avoda, so he has to be in a state of non-blemished. Okay. So those are the various drushas. So it's not a why, it's just simply a what. Those are the various drushas that teach us the halachas regarding a kohen who is a chalal versus a kohen who is a bamum. Kohen is a chalal, avoda so b'di'evet is kshera, a kohen is a bamum, b'di'evet the avoda is pasul.
So how far back do they go? Everything is done, they get to bring kohen all the
time. Yeah. So if it's a kind of bamum that's been around with him his whole life, so
it doesn't help here?
No. No, it helps in Tumah Tahara, but not regarding a Kohen who's a Bamum. No. Okay, Adkan. That takes us to the end of yesterday's daf. Let's start. We're starting now today's daf, and when we start today's daf, so this is really now not a shift in the overarching topics of the Masechta, but it's going to be now from here till basically the end of the Masechta. We're going to talk about Yichus. We're going to talk about lineage, matters of what kind of lineage you have. Although we have not finished the third parak yet, but we find this in Masechtos, where sometimes the turn of the topic changes one or two Mishnayos before the next parak. Right, in Rosh Hashanah, just the first one that comes to my head. So in the beginning of the, I think it's the third parak, but in other words, it's like one more Mishnah carried over from the previous, and then the new sugya. Okay, generally speaking, it's very organized, and sometimes you have like a Mishnah at the end of one parak that starts the new topic, even though we haven't started the fourth parak. Fourth parak will be more of this, questions of Yichus. Our Mishnah is going to give us the most basic of rules regarding Yichus. We're basically going to look at our Mishnah, and it's going to be divided into four different categories. Let's begin. Category number one, Kol Makom Sheish Kedushin Ve'ein Avera. If there is Kedushin, meaning Tfisa's Kedushin, the Kedushin works, and there is no Avera whatsoever in this marriage. It is a legitimate union, where the Torah has no prohibition with it whatsoever. So, Hole Chavlad Acher HaZachar. So in terms of the resulting child, the child is going to follow dad. So, Ezezu, give me examples of this as a Mishnah. Kohenis Levia v'Yisraelis. Let's say you have a woman who is either a Kohen Levia or Yisraelis. Shenisu l'Kohen Levi v'Yisrael. Who marries a Kohen Levi v'Yisrael. And here, you can mix and match. It doesn't matter how you mix and match. So you have any one of these unions with any one of these, with any one of those. So two to the third, so eight permutations. So the... it's three squared. Anyway, so the v'chol makom. I'm sorry. The shenasal kohen levi v'yisrael. So that is category number one. And so therefore, what's going to determine? Well, this is halacha we all know, right? This is our day to day life. So this is halacha we all know. So the resulting child is going to be whatever the father is. So if the father's a kohen, the child's a kohen. If the dad's a levi, the child's a levi. If the father's yisrael, the child is yisrael. Okay, that's category number one. Category number two, v'chol makom sheish kedushin v'yesh avera. If there's tfisa's kedushin, but there's also an avera. Okay, in other words, we've been discussing this for a long time now, but this is really the Mishnah that discusses the idea that even though the Torah prohibits such a union, but at the same time recognizes a union, and there's going to be tfisa's kedushin. So if you have Tfisa's Kedushin and it's an Avera, so Havlad Holech Achar HaPagum. So what the child now is going to be is the resulting blemish, meaning regardless of whether it's mom or it's dad. What if mom or dad are the cause of the illicit union, so the child is going to take on that blemished status. Now the first example over here in this Mishnah is a little bit confusing, because the first example over here, there's nothing wrong with mom, there's nothing wrong with dad. The problem is the union between mom and dad. So the first example doesn't really perfectly fit in to this construct of one is a pogrom and one is a non-pogrom. The first example is Ezezuzu Aman l'Kohen Gadol Grusha v'Chalutza l'Kohen Hejot. Let's say you have a widow marrying a Kohen Gadol. Let's say you have a Grusha or a Chalutza marrying a Kohen Hejot. So again, nothing wrong with either one of them. Right, the Amana Kohen Gadol is fine, Amana is fine independently. The union is what's prohibited. But still, the rule is going to be the same. Or let's say you have a Kohen marrying a Grusha. So then, the resulting child is going to be Pugim. Now Pugim in this case means the child is going to be a Chalal. Or if it's a girl, the child is going to be a Chalala. Kohen Hejon, Mamzeris Unisin Ali Israel, Bas Israel, Mamzer Unisin. These next examples are going to fit much better into the construct, where if either the father is a Mamzer or the mother is a Mamzeris, and their partner is a non-Pogum, so the resulting child is going to be a Mamzer. Or let's say the father is an Asin or the mother is an Asin, so the resulting child is going to be, mother's an Asina, so the resulting child is going to be a Nasin or Nasina, depending if it's a boy or a girl. Okay, Nasin, we've gone over this in the past. The Givonim, who made a pact, a treaty against the Givonim. So, but because they were Kananim, so therefore they were various gzeras were made historically over the generations. Yoshua made a gzera, David then made another gzera, but basically they were avodim forever.
And that's a status as opposed to a lineage?
Yes, yeah. That's, in other words, it's that zera includes the status change. Yes. V'chol mishein la alav kedushin, aval yesh la alav acherim kedushin. Now, let's say there's no tzvisas kedushin. The easiest way to say it, and as Tosos points out over here, the halachic way to say it, meaning this is the halachically accepted opinion, is that let's say there's no tzvisas kedushin, i.e., she's an erva. So we just went through the parshiyos of Acharei Mos and Kedoshim, Torah treats, and because it's a leap year, we got it on two separate Shabbosim. So the Torah treats us to what are the list of arayos. You find them first in Acharei Mos, where there the Torah sets up the Isurim, and then in Parshas Kedoshim, the Torah then repeats them with the punishment. So any one of those arayos in the Torah, so there's no tefisas Kedushin, meaning the Kedushin just simply does not take effect. And the way the Mishnah puts this in this is category 3 in the Mishnah. The way the Mishnah puts this is that there is no Kedushin to this person, but there would be Kedushin to other person. So let's say, for example, it's your sister. Your sister's an Erva. So you try to be Mekadosh her, the Kedushin just simply doesn't take effect. If somebody else, another Jew, were trying to Mekadosh her, of course it's going to work. So that's exactly the point of the Mishnah. She's an Erva to you. Therefore, there's no Kedushin. Havlad Mamzer. So then the resulting child is going to be a Mamzer. Basically, this is how a Mamzer is formed. A Mamzer is formed when two people who are arayos to one another create a child, so that child is going to be a Mamzer. Over here, definition is very simple. If a man has relations with anyone who's an erva to him, so the resulting child is going to be a Mamzer. And finally, category number 4. Chol mi she'ein lo alav v'lo alachem kedushin. Let's say there is simply no tefisas kedushin, not for you, not for anybody. So avlad kamosa, so then the resulting child is going to be after mom. Will take on the status of mom. Vlad shivcha v'nachris. So let's say a man produces a child with either a shivcha kananis or a non-Jewish woman. So then the resulting child is going to be a non-Jew or a evikanani. I switched the orders. A evikanani or a non-Jew. And as Rashi points out over here, if afterwards, subsequently, they want to convert, they are not only allowed to do so, but they will have full-fledged status of being a convert, i.e. a Jew, meaning the resulting child will not be a mamzer at all. Okay. Adkan, so that is our Mishnah. Our Mishnah gives us 4 different categories of unions. Category number 1, just quickly to repeat and to recap, category number 1, where it is Tfisa's Kedushin and a perfectly legitimate union. So then status of the child follows the father. Category number 2, there will be Tfisa's Kedushin, but it is an illicit union. The Torah prohibits such a union, so then the child is going to follow the Pogum. Category number 3, it's an erva, which means that there will not be tefisas kedushin. So then the resulting child is going to be a mamzer. And then category number 4, there is no kedushin at all, not with you, not with anyone else, i.e. a shivcha kananis or a nachris. So then the resulting child is going to follow mom. Ad kan divrei hamishnah. That is that's the basic outline of the mishnah. The rest of today's daf is just simply Perish HaMishnah. Now, what exactly are we saying when we say Perish HaMishnah? You look carefully at the Mishnah, especially category number 1, category number 2. Look at the opening of category number 1. Kol Makom. When you see the words Kol Makom, what should that sound off? That should sound off that we're speaking in generalities. Meaning, yes, it's true, the Mishnah gave examples, but Kol Makom means there are other cases as well. Okay. So, that needs to be fleshed out. What other cases are we talking about? And then look at that. Stay in category number one in the Mishnah. The Ezezu. And what are these? Meaning, what does the word Ezezu seem to indicate? That's a miut. That's a limitation. So in other words, when the Mishnah presents this category number one, it opens up with the words kol makom, and it also, which is expansive, but at the same time, ezezu, that's limiting. Category number two, we did the Mishnah did the same thing. Kol makom, sheyesh kedushin v'yesh avera. So it starts off with a kol makom, that's a ribui, and then ezezu, so that is a miut. So you see that when the Mishnah introduces us to category 1 and 2, it opens up with the expansive kol makom, and then it shrinks it to ezezu. Okay, and with that stated, so let's start with the Gemara. Kol makom sheyesh kedushin, Amar le Rabbi Shimon, probably Reish Lakish, on the side of the Gemara, you'll see it's Reish Lakish. Amar le Rabbi Shimon, Rav Yochanan, Klalahu de kol makom sheyesh kedushin ve'navera, holech havlad, sorry, I mixed it up again, havlad holech acher hazacher. So really, every single time that we have a kedushin and it is a perfectly legitimate union, so that means to say that the child is going to follow the father, but I'm going to demonstrate to you that that's not always true, says Reish Lakish to Rav Yochanan. Just I'll say this parenthetically, Rav Yochanan, we had it earlier in the Masechta and Kedushin, Rav Yochanan says that whenever the Mishnah tells you a klal, a general rule, so there are always going to be exceptions. Even when the Mishnah says there are going to be exceptions, there's going to be other exceptions as well. So I'm just thinking out loud. From Rav Yochanan's standpoint, like just because the Mishnah says here's a general rule, there are always going to be exceptions. So anyway, But let's consider the following. Hare. We're now in the top of Samach Zayin Amud Aleph. Gershon Oser Mamzeris. What if you have a convert who marries a Mamzeris? Okay. First question we need to ask. Is a Ger allowed to marry a Mamzeris? Now, a Jew is not allowed to marry a Mamzeris. That's a law in the Torah. It's a negative prohibition. Can a Ger marry a Mamzeris? Well, that's really predicated on the following discussion, which the Gemara is going to have later on. But we need to know it now just to understand what's going on. A Ger is a Jew.
You're right.
Undoubtedly, no reservations, no hesitations, a ger is a Jew. However, in terms of a status, there is a question, it's a question amongst the Tanayim, whether or not a ger fits under the category of kahal. Now, in terms of all areas of halacha, it doesn't bear any real status on him, meaning he'll be counted towards a minyan. In other words, they're chayv in all mitzvahs in the Torah. It's just a question of whether or not they're in this label in the status of kahal. Why does it make a difference? Because we know the Torah says regarding a mamzer, lo yavo bekal Hashem. A mamzer is not allowed to marry somebody who is in this umbrella status of kahal. So when a person converts, when a non-Jew converts and becomes a Jew, so are they in the status of kahal? That's a basic question which the Gemara later on is going to debate, but we need to know that machlok is right now. And here's what we need to know. We need to know that according to Rabbi Yossi, according to Rabbi Yossi, a ger is not considered kahal. Therefore, according to Rabbi Yossi, a ger is perfectly allowed to marry a mamzeris. Because the only prohibition in the Torah regarding a mamzer is or mamzeris is lo yavo bekal, and a ger is not in this umbrella status of kahal. That is the opinion of Rav Yossi, and so therefore, from the ger standpoint, it is a perfectly legitimate union. There's no isser in it whatsoever. Now, according to Rav Yossi, so what do you have? A perfectly legitimate union. The resulting child is going to be what? Okay. Now you see the issue. Gershon Asa, we're on the top of Samach Zayin Amud Aleph. Gershon Asa Mamzeres v'yesh kedushin v'ein avera. So it seems to fit into category number one. There's tvisus kedushin. There's no avera and avlad holech achar apagum. And we also know that the child is going to be a mamzer or mamzeres, whether it's a boy or a girl. And detanya gershon asa mamzeres avlad mamzer divrei Rav Yossi. So it's interesting, and the philosophy behind it. It's not for me to discuss, right? Just the halacha is much easier to discuss. But in other words, the Torah sanctions such a union, even though the resulting child is going to be a mamzer. So, b'divrei Rav Yossi, that's Rav Yossi's opinion. So now, according to Rav Yossi's opinion, what do we have now? We have something that seemingly should fit in category number one, but the result is going to be that the child is a pogum. And that's not what we learned in category number one. So that is a problem. So Gershon also mamzer of Vlad mamzer Rav Yosi. So Amalei mitzvah masis from Rav Yosi masis from Rav Yehudi. So Rav Yochanan's response is, well, you start off with an assumption that our Mishnah is going like Rav Yosi. Well, let's change that assumption. Our Mishnah is going like Rav Yehuda. Damar ger lo yisa mamzeris. According to Rav Yehuda, a ger, when he converts, does take on the status of being part of Kahal. Therefore, a ger is not allowed to marry a mamzeris. So now, v'yesh kedushin v'yesh avera. Havad olech achar apagam. So then, if that's true, so then, according to Rav Yehuda, that fits in perfectly with the categories of our Mishnah. And specifically, that would fit into category number two. Meaning, it is a tfisas kedushin, but it's a non-sanctioned marriage. The ger is considered kahal. A ger is not allowed to marry a mamzer. Okay. Vinisnaya. So then, a very simple question. Let's say you're right. Let's say that our Mishnah, it would fit into category number two. You know, we just read the Mishnah. Would it be so difficult for the Mishnah to include that? Meaning the Mishnah gives the examples of what fits into category number two. So why doesn't the Mishnah just simply give that as one of the examples? So Tana Kol Makom DeSeifa LaAsuyeh. So the Gemara says it's encrypted in the Mishnah. Because the Mishnah opens up category number two with the words Kol Makom. And as I mentioned a couple of moments ago, you see the Kol Makom is broadening, meaning there are other examples as well. The Mishnah doesn't go through all the examples, but the Kol Makom is teaching us that there are other examples. And according to Rav Yehuda, another example for category number two would be a ger marrying a mamzeris. Ibai sam ala olam Rav Yosihi. Or we could do the following. Really, we could say our Mishnah is going like Rav Yosi. Now, the problem, of course, is that it doesn't fit into category number one. Meaning, it fits, but it doesn't fit. It's, according to Rav Yosi, it's a sanctioned marriage. There's tefisas kedushin, but the child doesn't follow the father. The child follows the pogum. So how do you learn that in category number one of the Mishnah? Vitana ezezu lemeute. So the Gemara says, exactly. That's also encrypted in the Mishnah, because the Mishnah says the words ezezu. That means that these examples are fit in category number one, but there are other examples where there would be tefisas kedushin, and it's a perfectly sanctioned marriage, but the child does not follow the father. Meaning, this also is encrypted in the Mishnah with the words ezezu. Ve'ezezu v'su lov arei chalal shana sabas yisrael. So the Gemara says, well, let's consider the following. What if a chalal were to marry a bas yisrael? Okay, so you have a kohen, but he's devoid of his kedushas kahuna, because his parents were kohen and divorcee, and so he's a chalal, and he marries a bas yisrael. Diyesh kedushin ve'ein avera. So here, is there tefisas kedushin? Sure. Is there an avera? No, there's no avera. Chalal is allowed to marry a Jewish woman. Now, havlad holech achar hazachar. So now, So this is another example where it seemingly should fit in category number one, and meanwhile, what's going to be the resulting child? So the Gemara says, Halokasha ki Rabbi Dustai ben Rabbi Yehuda Sfirlei. So the Gemara says, well, this is not going to be a problem, because our Mishnah is subscribing to the viewpoint of Rabbi Dustai. Rabbi Dustai, we saw this just a couple days ago. We're saying it again right now, right here. And that is that according to Rabbi Dustai, when a challah marries a bas yisrael, she's considered like a mikvah. We're saying this by way of analogy. Meaning just like a mikvah is metaher, so the resulting child is going to be tahor. Meaning the resulting child is not going to be a pogum. So v'harei Yisrael shenasa chalala diyesh kedushin vein avera. Well, let's do it the other way. Let's have Yisrael marrying a chalala, where once again there's kedushin, there's no avera, so it's category one, and avlad olech achar zachar. And meanwhile, the child is going to follow the father. Tana kol makom dereisha la'asuye. So the Gemara says, okay. But again, that's not a problem. Meaning, because it wasn't given as an example in the Mishnah, but again, remember, in the Mishnah, the first category opened up with the words Kol Makom, which means that there are other examples where you're going to have Jesus Kedushin, Noah Vera, and the child is going to follow the father, and this would be another example of that. Okay. Vinisnaya, Behedja. So the Gemara says, now, again, why don't we have that? Why doesn't the Mishnah just write this as one of the examples? Mishum de lo masni la. So the Gemara says, well, here the problem is that it's not going to write smoothly in the Mishnah. The Gemara says, let's try to figure out. How would the Mishnah have written the chalal chalala in the Mishnah? Hechin nifnei. So the Gemara says, let's imagine. How would the Mishnah read? Kohenis, Levi of Yisrael, v'chalala, shenasa, l'koin Levi v'Yisrael. If a female Kohen Levi Yisrael or Chalal, Chalala, were to marry a male Kohen Levi in Yisrael. Now, the point that the Mishnah is trying to make is that if the Chalala were to marry either a Levi or a Yisrael, so the child is going to be fine, perfectly fine, meaning following the father. Because again, our Mishnah is subscribing to the viewpoint of Rav Dustein. But the problem is that once the Mishnah formulates in this manner, so then it sounds like our Chalala can marry any one of the three men. She can marry a Yisrael, she can marry a Levi, and you could erroneously conclude that she can marry a Kohen as well. The Chalala Kohen Michazia. And you know, obviously she can't do that. A Chalala cannot marry a Kohen. Right? We're seeing that in the beginning of this week's Parsha. Okay, so fine. So what do we have so far? We have a number of examples that are not in the Mishnah, and basically, the Gemara is pointing out is that just because it's not in the Mishnah doesn't mean anything. Because in category number one, you have the Kol Makom, which tells us that there are other examples like this, and you also have the word Ezezu, which means there are going to be cases that are excluded. And that's true in category number one, and the same thing is true in category number two. Gemara goes over a couple of other examples of such a phenomena. V'ha'ika de Rabba Bar Chana. Da'am Rabba Bar Chana, am Rav Yochanan. Here, the Gemara quotes, in the name of Rav Yochanan, Mitzvah Sheni Shenatza Mitzvah Shoshona. Let's say you have second generation Egyptian marrying a first generation Egyptian woman. Now, I say second generation, first generation, we all understand. An Egyptian is allowed to convert. Nowadays, by the way, I say Egyptian, I'm going back to days of old. Right? The Gemara points out that after Sancheirev took every nationality and distributed them one with another, so we don't have any more purebred Egyptians. We don't have any more purebred Edomites, meaning, you know, they'll call themselves Egyptians, but halachically they're not what they once were. Okay, so, but right now we're just speaking in the abstract. If you have an Egyptian who converts, the Torah says that only the third generation is allowed to enter into Kahal Hashem. So that means if, let's say, you have an Egyptian couple who decide that the two of them want to convert, so they're going to have children, their children are now considered second generation, and their grandchildren are now third generation, who are allowed to marry into Klal Yisrael. We're dealing over here with a really simple question. Let's say you have your Egyptian convert community, and you have a second generation marrying a first generation. It's a great question. That next generation is going to be what? So from dad's standpoint, he's already generation two. So that means that his father was an Egyptian convert. So now from dad's standpoint, great. The child should be fine. The problem, of course, is mom is a first generation Egyptian convert. So that means that the child, from her standpoint, is going to be second generation.
There's no problem getting married to each other.
No, absolutely. It's a perfectly sanctioned marriage. So now, b'na shlishi. So the halacha is, according to Rabbi Yochanan, now this is going to be debatable. We'll see the debate in just a moment, but according to Rav Yochanan, the child's considered a shlishi. So what do you have over here? You have sanctioned marriage, obviously tefisas kedushin, perfectly sanctioned marriage, and the child is following dad, not mom. So it belongs in category number one. So Tana Kol Makom Dereisha L'Asuya. Again, the Gemara says that's fine. That's why you have in category number one the opening of Kol Makom. Now, Ula Rav Dimi Damar Sheni Have. Now, according to Rav Dimi argues. Rav Dimi says that if I have dad being generation number two, mom being generation number one, according to Rav Dimi, the child is generation number two, following mom, not following dad. So Tana Ezezu Lamute. So the Gemara says, but that's also fine, because the Ezezu is coming to exclude. So according to Rav Dimi, that's exactly what we're doing over here. We're excluding this case, because even though Tfisas Kedushin, perfectly sanctioned marriage, but it's not, the result is not going to be following dad, it's going to be following mom. The Gemara says, now, what about the statement that was made by Ravin, who said this in the name of Rav Yochanan, which is, Umos halach achar hazachar. When it comes to non-Jewish nationalities getting together, it's an intermarriage, but I say intermarriage meaning different nationalities getting together, so the resulting child is going to follow dad. We'll explain that better later in the daf. Tomorrow, let's say. Nizgairu, halach achar hapogam shebishneim. Now, if they are converts who are getting together, so then you follow the pogam shebishneim. So, now what do we have over here? We have a perfectly sanctioned marriage. We're talking about the conversion. A perfectly sanctioned marriage. And they get together. And we're going to go with whichever one is worse. Again, I'll explain that better later on. Whichever one is worse. And we're not following dad. So, shouldn't we follow dad? Tfisus kedushin, perfectly legitimate marriage, shouldn't we follow dad? So again, the Gemara's response is Ezezu. The Ezezu is coming to exclude. So the Gemara says, now, hi mai. So let's just quickly run through this. The Gemara says, let us just see what just happened together in the Amud Aleph of today's daf. If you say that our Mishnah is following like Rav Yehuda, so what do we have over here? We have a very organized Mishnah. In other words, you have category 1, category 2, you have a kol makom of category 1 and an ezezu in category 1. You have category 2, a kol makom of category 2 and an ezezu of category 2. And now it works out, if you subscribe to the viewpoint that our Mishnah is found like Rav Yehuda, we can basically plug in to the kol makom and the ezezu of categories 1 and 2. Kol makom deresha lasu yisrael shenasa chalala. So the kol makom of the resha is coming to include Yisrael marrying a chalala. And Uda Rava Barbachana, and the halacha of Rava Barbachana, that a second generation Egyptian convert marrying a first generation, the child is going to follow the father, not the mother. Great. And the Ezezu, and then category number 1, finishing up with the Ezezu, Lemutid Rav Dimi V'Ravin. That's coming to exclude the halachas Rav Dimi and Ravin. The halacha of Rav Dimi is that a second generation marrying a first generation, the child is going to be a second generation. Now Rashi here points out, you can't hold both like Rav Dimi and like Ravin, obviously. They're arguing with one another. Rashi just points out over here, whichever one you pick, meaning we're not going to pick, but if you hold like Rav Dimi, it goes in the kol makom. If you hold like Ravin, it goes on the ezezu. So the point is that there's something that fits into either one, the kol makom and the ezezu. And Ravin's halacha is that after you convert, you follow the pogom, you follow the worst of the two, and you don't follow the father. And that's the ezezu of the rishon. Okay. And then kol makom de seifa, and now when you get to category number 2 and it opens up with the words kol makom, so what is that coming to speak about? So last week gershon asa mamzeris, that's the case of gershon asa mamzeris, where according to Rav Yehuda it is a tfisas kedushin but a non-sanctioned marriage, and the resulting child is going to be a pogum. Fine. That's all if you subscribe to the viewpoint that our Mishnah is found like Rav Yehuda. However, but if you say that our Mishnah is found like Rav Yossi, so then kol makom deresha kedam aron. So now the kol makom of category number 1 we see above, and ezezu kedam aron, the ezezu of category number 1 see above, and then el kol makom de seifa lasu yemai. But the kol makom mentioned in category number 2 not teaching us anything. Meaning, because according to Rav Yossi, the convert marrying the mamzeris is a perfectly sanctioned marriage. It belongs in category number 1, not in category number 2. So now it comes out that according to Rav Yossi, I have a kol makom and I have an ezezu of category number 2, which is not explicating anything. There's nothing that it's actually alluding to. So ula tameh, so the Gemara says, okay, the question is good, but says the Gemara, but let's follow through with your question. Live Rav Yehuda, let's go back to your proposal that our Mishnah is following like the opinion of Rav Yehuda. Ezezu de seifa lamali. You know, in category number 2, there was also an ezezu, which means that we're going to exclude a case where it's a tfisas kedushin but a non-sanctioned marriage. And the child is not going to be pogum. There's no such animal. Okay, don't take me literally. So a case like that doesn't exist. So Ella, I did the Tana Reisha Ezezu, Tana Seifa Ezezu. So what is the Mishnah going for? You know the answer to this. We've done this time and again. Symmetry. So now Hachanami, I did the Tana Reisha Kol Makom, Tana Nami Seifa Kol Makom. So the same thing is true in terms of the Reisha. The Kol Makoms are there for purposes of symmetry, and so that we can memorize the Mishnah even a little bit better. Okay. Today we finished the topic of discussion regarding a woman is mezana under the testimony of one witness. Is that a halachically significant matter? Machlokes Chuna Bayin Rava. halacha falls like Rava, right? By Davar Shebe'erva, you need two witnesses. We saw the Rabbi Tarfon, Rabbi Kiva debate regarding a Kohen who does the Avoda, learning later that he was either a Chalal or a Bamom. The halachas are different for the two. We discussed that earlier this morning as well. And then we started the Mishnah on Samech Vav Amud Beis, going into today's daf. It's really the entirety of today's daf, and that is the discussion of Yuchsin. We're talking about lineage. Our Mishnah categorically gives us four different categories of unions and the resulting child. And the Gemara, what we discussed up until now, is that there are numerous cases that our Mishnah did not explicate, but it's encrypted in the Mishnah with the words Kol Makom and Ezezu, and it's just a question now of what case it gets plugged into which one of the banners of the Mishnah.